Kurt, my friend, it sounds to me as if all of America on this day is celebrating doing something that God's told us specifically not to do.
They are.
You have an oath.
Oh, they are.
Make a pledge.
Right.
My son, if you have at some point given a pledge, and if you have joined with a foe to be accepted, in association with your immoral country, your loudmouthed and evil public speakers who are your fellow countrymen, who comprise your troubling social, geographic, racial, religious group, you have bound yourself to having shaken hands with that which is illegitimate and unauthorized, foreign and estranged from my hand. You know, it really is this simple. There's three places you can be. You can be estranged from God's hand in association with one or many human institutions,
mm-hmm.
political ones, patriotic ones, military ones, religious ones. You can be in that great divide where, you know, you're really not patriotic. You're really not pro-military. You're really not religious at all. You're just, you're a sports-loving, video-game-playing, working guy, gal that's, just trying to get along.
Yeah,
go along, get along.
On Sunday.
Yeah, you're just, the National Church of the NFL is what you might do on Sunday if it's not out gardening in your yard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that you're just in the netherworld.
Neutral zone.
Yeah, the neutral zone. Or you're with the island. Now, the numbers here are that those who are political and religious and somehow affiliated with human institutions having made this kind of pledge, you know, would probably be, I'm going to guess, 60%+ of the world's population.
Okay, that's fair.
And that it may be 39% of the population, I'd say, why don't we just do 60-40? 40% is in the neutral zone.
Sure.
You know, if you're somebody in many places of the world where, you know, you just get up and it's hard labor. You're working really hard to provide for yourself and your family to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your chances are you're not in the religious zone. Chances are you're not in the in the political zone.
It takes some time to hang out and be religious all the time. You can't. You have to turn it into a job.
Yeah. So, of course, America's sports teams do. They get paid to pretend to be patriotic. So, but it's not 1%. It's one in a million that have chosen to take sides with the other one.
Right.
And it's really shocking. I mean, it's just as shocking I guess I'm not shocked that 60 or 40% of the world's population would be in the neutral zone. But 60% engaged in something that is opposed to God, all while thinking what they're doing is godly? That's pretty shocking.
Yeah, and I guess they really do. I didn't come from a patriotic family, so even though they were all veterans, we never put out a flag. We never played that game. So.
Yeah, I did. I did, and I was. Oh, yeah, man, I had big flag poles, and they were lit at night, and I went and got flags that had been flown over the USS Arizona Memorial. And
really?
Oh, yeah, man, I had it bad. I was very antagonistic to the those who protested the Vietnam War. I was a right-wing Christian wacko. I was what I'm denouncing.
Yeah.
So, I know what it's like, man. I was brought up in a household that you stood at attention, you put your hand over your heart, and you sang the national anthem. But, you know, I was the guy that put out the most Christmas lights in my home. I always had to have the biggest possible Christmas tree that would fit. And, man, I was playing and singing the Christmas carols.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who is really fortunate that this was written in the perfect. And if it had been written in the negative, like the 10 instructions, the they're written in the negative, so they're written in the imperfect, which gives us a reprieve. This was written in the positive, and therefore not negated, and therefore it was written in the perfect, which gives us a reprieve. Can you explain to our listeners as to why this, if you have at some time given a pledge to your country, why that being written, having pledge, Arab, being written and the perfect is an advantage for us?
Well, because if we change, then we're no longer participating. Then it just goes for naught.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you would be locked in. If you ever did something, then you would be damned by that.
Right.
Just like the statement in stone. There are, if you don't continue, I mean, Moshe, well, I was having this discussion with somebody not too long ago, and Moshe, you know, killed a man.
Yeah.
I think he was just most very justified in doing it. He was defending somebody else's life, and the guy died, and what, he clobbered him.
Right.
But that's not, he wasn't making a habit of it. He wasn't going out becoming a trained murderer, trained killer.
No. And in this particular case, which it says, if you have at some time in your past made this. So the cure, which Yahweh provides a cure here, is to how to cure yourself of this problem. The cure is available to those only if they have done this but are no longer doing it. If it was written in the imperfect, if you were, you could apply the cure while doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the cure requires you to stop doing it. So until you stop, the cure doesn't work.
That's right.
So it is to be an American means you'd have to be as disgusted by Memorial Day as I am.
You could not grow up in America, though, and not. You have to really be conscious, awake, to make that decision, because you can't go anywhere without this affecting you. I grew up in Australia in my teen years, and I could not. You started the day with God Save the Queen. I mean, Anzac Day, they called it, the same thing. You can't avoid this stuff.
And I've got to tell you, it's really troubling to me because of the fact that at one time patriotism was the purview of Christian conservatives. It was Christian conservatives that rallied behind the troops, that wanted to spend more money on the military, that justified all of our wars.
Right.
And they were the flag wavers. And it was the liberals that were protesting the wars and protesting the amount of money we spent on our military and were dishonoring the military. Okay, but today, that isn't true. If you look at every liberal media outlet today, every single one of them has got an honoring the troops thing. They're all, every one of them will write articles and speak about America's intervention in Afghanistan or Iraq or bombing of Libya from a positive perspective. And so today, acquiescing to one's country, being patriotic, being pro-military, is ubiquitous on the right and the left. So how in the world did that happen?
Yeah. If you keep repeating a lie over and over again, it becomes the truth to most people.
Yeah, but it was the right wing conservatives that were repeating the lie, and it was the liberals that were advocating against the lie. And now both liberal and conservative are both advocating the lie. What I think may have happened is that somewhere along the way, liberalism is a liberal use of power; it's collective control. That the liberal recognized that the single most effective means to getting to control everyone, to impose one's will, is the military. And they began to bond with the military because the military is the ultimate institution of top-down authority, where the individual gives up all freedom and is controlled from above.
Well, didn't the Illuminati guy?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he say that? Yeah, Weisskopf. Adam, didn't he present another form of religion to replace? So
yes.
Maybe as American religion became less religious and became more prosperous and more liberal in their attitudes towards things, they had to replace it with something, and patriotism was the easy.
It was the religion of the enlightened. It was the religion of man. It was socialist secular humanism.
So Well, they, instead of religion, they gave him that as their religion, and
correct.
Took the hook. They got this. They got, went right into the snare, as we're about to hear.
Yes, that's correct. So then this goes on. You lure others into relinquishing their freedom, and you yourself are ensnared and controlled by the statements of your mouth. You are caught by way of the words of your speech. You know, Paul, who's an articulate guy, was feeling sorry for the victims of religion and religious customs. And I say, no, that's not Yahweh's perspective. No, he sees the victims of these institutions as actually empowering them. That, you know, the more people that go along with the myth of militarism or patriotism or politics, whatever it is, or religion, the more people that go along, the more credible it becomes. You know how many times I've been told that you know Islam is true because it's the world's fastest growing religion? Which is to affirm Yahweh's point here. When people go along, now by the way, it's not true, but when people go along and acquiesce to something, it gives that thing institution credibility. You know how many times I've said, you know, there's no way that you can be right about what you're writing, and because it's just one person versus millions of people who are religious and don't view it that way.
Yep.
You know, you can't tell me that you alone are right and everybody else is wrong.
Yeah, the old saying, 40 million Frenchmen can't be wrong. Yeah, they can.
Yeah, they can. Yeah, and that's what God's saying, is that by you joining in, you aid and abet these human institutions. When you go along, it's when enough people don't stand up. That's why the first hour of this program today, I'm saying the problem is, America, you've been given every evidence that your government is counterproductive and corrupt, and yet you still support it and love it and give pledges to it. What's it going to take to wake you up? And the problem is that there's not enough people who are willing to take a stand against it to make a difference. And the fewer there are that are willing to stand up against it, and the more that are going to go along with it, the more influence and power and credibility the lie has. I think to a large degree, the reason that the truth as exposed by WikiLeaks and Edward Snowden and the U.S. War College on the nature of the Defense Department, the reason that it isn't seen as credible, even though it's irrefutable fact, is there aren't enough people
shouting it out.
Correct.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you do, because that's Yahweh's perspective. It's we are
comatose.
Yeah. He says we're essentially comatose. He says, so then, decide to engage thusly. So if you have done, if you have previously sworn an oath, I have. A religious oath, political oath, you name it.
Yeah.
So then, decide to engage thusly. Asha Zoth Impau. Now choose to act upon this. Actually doing this at this time is a logical, thoughtful, and sequential response to what has just been expressed. This was written in the call stem. You know what the call stem represents?
Yeah, that's the,
actual literal.
It's
a relationship that is genuine here. I mean, so this is, it's establishing a relationship that is actual and genuine, and needs to, in the words, the instructions need to be interpreted literally. So he says, I want you to decide to engage thusly. You shouldn't be looking for symbolic meaning here.
It's not metaphor talking, man.
Right. Go do this. But choose to do it.
Yes.
The call stem tells us to interpret it literally. The imperative mood. So he says, so then decide to engage thusly. It's in the imperative mood. Now, the imperative mood expresses second person volition.
Yes.
So is he saying, I'm ordering you to do this?
No.
Or this should be your choice?
No, it has to be volition. It's choice.
Right.
It has to be your choice. It can't. He's not a commander.
No. This has got to be what you want to do. It's not only to choose to do it. Volition means this is what you want to do.
Yeah, free will, and he always did it that way. I really, really want you to.
Right. Now, in this case, though, by the way, it's not the cohortative, which would be first-person volition.
Yeah.
Now, while I think it is first-person,
want you to want this.
You're right. But in this case,
I want what I want.
Yeah, there you go. But in this particular case, he's saying that I want it to be your decision.
Mm-hmm.
It should be your decision. But you can read into this, if God is encouraging us to make this choice, then he wants us to make this choice. So although it was written as second person volition, it most certainly expresses the will of the speaker, which is Yahweh in this case. So he says, so then decide to engage thusly, my son. Now, you'll notice here that this was not written in the perfect, nor in the imperfect. There was no conjugation associated with this. Now, I thought that was really interesting. Most, you know, most verbs have a conjugation. It means, you know, stop doing it if you have previously done it, or do it one time, that's enough to get it done, or to do it on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
God is not saying that you have to do this on an ongoing basis. So, once may be sufficient, but he's not trying to limit it to once. There was no conjugation on this. So then decide to engage thusly. I'm not limiting the number of times you ought to do this, nor am I saying that it's something you ought to do over and over and over again, my son. And choose to escape defending yourself. Now, he's going to explain here, defending yourself isn't to pick up weapons. It isn't to be vicious. It's not to bite back. But he wants you to escape, and it's really escape. Tearing yourself away from, delivering yourself from, saving yourself from. It's not all. It's a saving, delivering, escaping harm kind of thing. So he's saying that these human institutions that you have previously given a pledge to, they are harmful. You need to escape. Now, that shades, influences God's perception of these rea, the national and geographic and religious institutions that we have pledged. We need to escape them. So it's not just walking away from, it's escape. Save yourself from them.
But now as you brought it up, you know, Abraham, when he said walk away from Babylon,
mm-hmm.
as he did with Moshe's children of Israel when Moshe threw them out.
Mm-hmm.
He never asked him to go back and whoop the Egyptians.
No.
He never asked him to go back.
No.
And he didn't even tell Abraham, now that you know the truth, go back to your cousins and
mm-hmm.
nieces and nephews and all those other people. He took one nephew with him, but
he
must have had extended family there. He didn't go back and say, now go back and straighten these people out.
Yeah, in fact, even Yahweh told him to leave your father's house, and he took his father with him.
He asked him, don't take these people, but they took him.
Yeah, and so it's what you're seeing there is that God did not require an absolute, perfect, and complete response by Abraham. He just needed Abraham to make the first move, which was to walk away from the country and from this society. But you notice, did Terah, his father, accompany Abraham into the promised land?
No, he died at Haran, didn't he?
Or? Yeah, he sure as heck did. So you're shedding these things along the way is the idea. But it says to escape defending yourself, while not so, of your own free will, elect to tear yourself away, delivering yourself from harm, saving yourself from unfavorable circumstances. This was written in the Niphil stem, which indicates that by separating ourselves from national pledges, we are spared their consequence. So it's a stem where we are both active and we are acted upon. So if we act in this way, we receive the benefit. So if we choose to escape, we are defending ourselves. That's a really an interesting stem. Because indeed, upon the condition that, even temporarily, you have come. Bo. This is also written in the perfect. Call stem. It's interpreted literally. And a perfect conjugation. For even if you have temporarily come to bowing down before the hand, influence, or control. So one was make the pledge.
Mm-hmm.
This one now is you're bowing down before the hand, influence, or control of your immoral country, of those loudmouthed and evil speakers or your fellow countrymen. So one is you're acquiescing to their influence. and the other is that you are actually giving a vocal pledge. Either way, if you, so this is advice, if you've done that at any one time, choosing to, then what he says is your answer to that is choose to actually go in a unpretentious way, willing to get a bit dirty, and press one's reasons for contention with the adversarial institution or individual, boldly astonishing and overwhelming them, showing great courage against besetting so as to disturb your moral country and countrymen.
As you read these things, I'm looking over my notes on everything I looked up, and yeah, that's you know, it's exactly what he says. I already knew that, but for the audience, if I make any contribution at all, I can at least verify you're absolutely on the money.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things here about Rafak is that it also communicates quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I was uncomfortable writing quickly in the definition because I don't think it is it's meant in the way that most people would interpret it if I wrote it as part of the definition, to quickly go and, you know, and confront them this way, you know, overwhelming them. Because it takes too long to prepare oneself to explain why you're walking away from these human institutions.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he, the fast, the quick implications here are that do it and get it over with. That your response to why you are walking away from these institutions ought not linger.
Mm-hmm.
You ought not, you know, spend a lifetime doing it.
Long drawn.
Why it wasn't written in the imperfect. You ought not spend your lifetime doing it. It ought to be this drawn out thing. Say what you have to say and be on with it.
Well, and then kick the dust off your feet, as Yosha said, and leave.
Right.
If they don't like it, leave.
Right. And as I was dealing with that, and I didn't, and I'm going to write it into the commentary as I finish writing commentary on this particular proverb. But it's really, I'm sure when you looked up the word, you saw things that showed a hurried nature to it. But I think that's what he means. Now, that would be the only thing that would be consistent with what we've come to know. But it tells me that in terms of exposing and condemning all of the things that are wrong with our country and world, we've done the job. It's time to move on. So it's interesting, Kirk, in the first where he says you've offered a pledge, then his advice is for us to choose to confront the institution in a vocal way. In this case, it's if you've come to bow down, that's a kind of a physical thing, then the verb is halak, to walk. You should walk.
Right.
And he even uses rafak, which means you're going to get a little bit dirty in doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's what happens. I mean, you want to expose your country, you're going to, speaking about some dirty stuff, you want to expose religion, man, you really are getting down in the mud.
Yeah. But also there's the warning, you know, if you're going to be religious and if you're going to be political and militaristic, he's not going to save you. So your only other option is to walk away.
Yep. But, you know, it's not an ongoing thing. You don't have to do it your whole life.
No.
It's not a one and done either, because it wasn't written in the perfect or the imperfect, but and there's an element of expediency here. I think what he's telling us is that do it as boldly, bluntly, comprehensively, overwhelm them, astonish them with what with the reasons you're going to leave and have left, but you don't need to make a whole lifetime of it because it's not the fun part.
No. Well, for me, I can only talk to myself, but I changed my mindset. And then the change in my perspective through studying the Torah is the ongoing thing. But that is the fun part to me.
Yeah. I mean, as a matter of fact,
I didn't know that much when I started, but I knew enough to say, okay, this is wrong. Go get away from this and start afresh.
You know, next week is my last week on Shattering Myths. And it's a combination of various things. This proverb was instrumental in it, as I realized that we ought not be associated with an institution like this, and that it's not, and that also we've done the job in terms of exposing why God wants us to walk away from our country and from religion and that sort of thing. We've done it. It's not the fun part. The fun part is studying the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, learning what God has to say, and then sharing it. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to continue on in a different format, just focusing on the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. In all likelihood, you, I, Scott, and Larry. And we're going to do 1 hour programs. My hope is we record 2 hours at a time twice a week. That'll give us a 1 hour program, 4 days a week. And then we have the hour and a half program on the, on the Shabbat, and all the programming's going to be on what God is sharing with us, because that is the fun part.
Well, I certainly look forward to being a little part of that. So
let's, that's what I think he's telling us here, is that, yeah, you need to be, to disassociate from these things, because they're harmful. And you need to let them know, give them both barrels as to why you're leaving. You know, press one's reasons for contention with the adversarial individual or institution, boldly astonishing and overwhelming them, showing great courage against your immoral country and countrymen. Pretty straightforward. Do not give yourself over to slumber, to being unaware, concerning your eyes and altered state of awareness and inactivity, the altered state of your eyelids. Why do you think this follows? That, he's got two admonitions here. If you've given the pledge, or if you've shown some difference to their authority, you need to walk away and you need to disassociate and then confront them. And now he says, don't give yourself over to being unaware, particularly regarding your eyes. Well, you think there's a connection here? Or is he just completely changing the subject?
Well, no, perspective, but... But, you know, even though I just flashed back to Yosha talking to his disciples, mm-hmm. and when he was warning them against Paul, mm-hmm. they already had it. They got it at that stage.
Right.
And he's telling them, even you could be,
right.
You could be swayed by this man. Right. So be real right. careful. Don't go back to sleep.
Right. Yeah. I think what he's saying here is that... You have actively given a pledge.
Mm-hmm.
You have actively shown your devotion to these institutions. And so I'm telling you to actively engage and to distance yourself from them and to speak out against them. And he said, do not let being unaware be your excuse.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's saying here. You know, don't give yourself over to having apathetic eyes so that... First hour of the program, I was saying, you know, what is it going to take in terms of information? Well, the information was provided. The vast preponderance of Americans didn't look at it, didn't consider it. And so he's saying, don't do that. Open your eyes. Come to know the truth. You know, being comatose here is not is a way to go. The way to go is to be active, to engage. But I didn't know I didn't do anything. That's not an excuse here. He says, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says the way that he wants us to defend ourselves and escape, this not Saul, is, he says, choose to escape defending yourself like a gazelle from the power of the hand of power. And in a similar fashion to the chirping bird from the fowler, from the trap. You know, we've talked about this before. Does the gazelle have any means of attacking its enemy?
No.
Or is it just flee?
It can only escape.
Right.
It can run away, it can jump up, it can outquick it.
Right.
But it doesn't have, it can't fight.
Right. And the same thing is, can it outquick the lion if the lion's got its jaws wrapped around its neck?
No, you didn't go on then.
Right. Can the sparrow outquick the fowler if it's in its trap?
No, if it's in the trap, it's dead there again. So,
what is the defense mechanism of the gazelle and the sparrow?
Jump away and scream a warning.
Nope, that's not the defense mechanism. Nope. The defense mechanism, because if it's already
or a fly,
if it's already in the jaws or claws or trap, It's too late, no matter how fast they fly or how fast they jump away.
Oh, not if you're in the trap. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the defense mechanism is being observant.
Yeah.
That's what those two animals have in common.
Yes.
The sparrow and the gazelle, is that their defense mechanism is they're aware. He is explaining what he meant by saying don't have apathetic sleeping eyes.
Mm-hmm.
The gazelle and the sparrow have their eyes open. They're paying attention to the danger around them, and they flee it. And they flee it very quickly, and they use great agility to flee it. You're right. But their defense mechanism is they're aware of what's happening. God just said, don't let your eyes close and be sleepy, because then you will not be aware, and you will be trapped before you even know it.
Well, you know, even though they have great smellers and noses as well and senses, but they're interesting enough, these animals all have their eyes on the side of the head, so they have peripheral vision. It's huge.
Yes.
Which keeps them also,
right.
We don't, of course, but we can move our head around.
We can see where we're going,
uh-huh.
And we can see what's in front of us, and it's very easy for us to read with eyes in front of our
mm-hmm.
faces. But the gazelle and the sparrow, they have their eyes on the side of their head so that they can be observant to what's happening all around them.
Yeah.
That's their defense mechanism.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is look around. Yeah, we can turn our heads. Look around. Be observant. And if you're not observant, and if you're not aware, then you're going to be played for a fool like 99.9% of Americans are played for fools because they're not aware. This is all he's constantly explaining and reinforcing these things. Now he's going to explain both the issues of being lethargic and the issues of becoming dependent upon human institutions and what it is that he doesn't like about human institutions because their influence on the individual. He says the habitually and inactive, the lethargic, should see observing and examining ra'ah, use their eyes, so he's playing off the eyes again, the movement of the ant, her ways, and be wise. So, again, be aware, look around you, pay attention, and try to understand what you're seeing. What's the movement of the ant? He says, beneficially and from a relationship perspective, she is no leader or ruler. No commander or officer, no government or imposed authority telling her what to do. She has no work foreman, public official, even clerk or scribe telling them what they need to be doing. Or anyone claiming to be in charge or control, especially a lord who reigns over her. So what we have done as Americans is we've acquiesced authority.
Mm-hmm.
We can say in the military, well, I only killed him because I was ordered to do so. Yeah, they told me so. You know, I had this profession of faith because that's what I was told to do. You know, I was told to go vote, so I voted.
And you always say you don't need anybody but me.
Yeah.
And I'm your father, not your right. Lord Master.
Right. And that those who acquiesce to all these government programs and entities to survive are, in essence, dependents. They've lost their freedom. They've lost sight of what's important. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't, you know, if you've paid in your Social Security, you can't take the Social Security that you have paid, and just so long as you're not dependent on the government.
Yeah.
Don't be dependent upon it. That's what God is saying here. And that he is opposed to hierarchical institutions, which virtually all religious institutions, all political institutions, all military institutions are all, and most economic institutions are hierarchical.
You know, I was just going to mention, in talking uh-huh. to Christians lately, they do know that everything is really screwed up, especially the older ones. They're biding their time, hoping they can get their retirement money and personally, I had one of them tell me he was trying to escape. You know, at some point he's going to retire and just get away. He said the country is doomed.
Yeah.
I think
people are aware of this.
Fair.
So why are we in a country like this applauding our military if we're doomed?
I guess they're scared to be seen not doing it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's why he says, have courage.
Yeah.
He didn't say have courage because there wasn't any danger.
No, you've got to have a backbone. You've got to be willing to take a stand if you're going to be able to do this. And taking a stand requires courage. There's no question that it does in this regard, and it's just something that we don't often do. So he says, you know, she prepares her food in the summer. She gathers in the harvest as storable food and a source of nourishment. Well, we don't do that anymore. Government in Portugal, for example, have been in power a couple of weeks. It was already overturned because of austerity. What austerity means is that the majority of the people are given something for nothing. And they want to continue to be given something for nothing. And they won't tolerate any other option.
Where do they think it comes from?
Well, they think that the 1% owes it to them, I guess.
And what if they move to another country?
Well, don't let them move. Take their money when and don't let them leave. That was France's answer.
Yeah, I remember.
The United States answer.
I remember as far as they with their $40, $50 million.
We seek relief. The United States passed a legislation that says that if you want to leave America, you have to leave half of your wealth here. You can't take it with you. It's not yours. We're going to confiscate it from you. For how long and to what extent, inactive, apathetic, and lethargic one, will you lie there and remain inactive? When and what will it take for you to arise and stand up from your altered state of awareness? That was the first hour of the show.
Yeah.
How much do you need to know? How much evidence needs to be put in front of you before you're going to change your perspective, your attitude, your mindset?
Well, we've all experienced that. We're talking about Paul to a Christian.
Yeah. I don't think it's a rhetorical question, by the way, here. I think God would genuinely like to know.
Yeah. I would.
I would. I can't figure it out.
What's your hot button? When do you hit that little note you can't stand anymore and say, okay, I got to do something?
When God tells you to walk away from political and religious institutions so that you can engage in a relationship with Him and you ignore Him, and then you are confronted with all information that says that your political and religious institution is a sham, a complete fraud, and you don't say, hey, maybe I ought to follow God's advice in this regard. That was pretty good advice. I think I ought to trust Him. If you're not going to put those pieces together, what's it going to take?
Well, you expose something like Christianity, and then they go back to the preacher and say, you know, I was told this, and he says, that ain't so, and they go, well, okay. I mean...
Yeah.
What? You know, you got a brain, use your brain.
Yes, exactly. You know, for how long and to what extent? You know, God is making it very clear that we have a very serious problem. And that, you know, and a wicked and worthless person, an unjust, false, and evil and vain individual is going to come about with perverse and corrupt speech, a sinister winking of his eyes, a subtle shuffling of his feet, all while casting aspersions with his fingers. And we're going to be, you know, as humanity, we were ill-prepared when Paul did this.
Mm-hmm.
Jews were ill-prepared when Rabbi Akiva did it.
Yeah.
The world was not prepared when Obama did it. When Hitler did it.
No.
And so with confusing and false perceptions which invert reality in his heart, he devises and describes antagonistic schemes without consideration of their consequence, which are evil and adversarial, and everything, continuously creating controversies as one who claims to be sent out as a messenger to do away with something important. Yeah, there's only one person in human history that fits that. That, of course, is Paul. But
all his children.
Yeah,
and all in his footsteps. Yeah,
all of those that have gone in his footsteps. And if you are know the Torah, you know, if you know it well, then you can't be confused in this way.
No.
You can't be led astray.
That's an absolute truth.
But most people are not, and so are not aware of it, so they're easy to play for fools. So he goes through this whole pledging to governments and being apathetic and not paying attention to the evidence around us and not separating ourselves from government. And he says, because of that, this is what's going to happen. And look what Paul did. In his premier letter, Romans, he tells Christians to believe that God established the Roman government for their good.
Yeah, something that just destroyed Israel. Oh. Yeah, right.
I mean, that's pretty hard to explain for good when it wasn't until, you know, what, 10 years, 15 years after he wrote that, Rome destroyed the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And that 50, 60 years later, they came in and crucified tens of thousands of Israelites, salted the land, hauled them away into slavery, built the Colosseum.
Satan,
And this was God's doing, that God did this for the good of humanity. I mean, when Rome acted in that way after Paul had written the letter to the Romans, can you imagine how stupid, how ignorant, how unaware people had to be to accept Paul as speaking for God?
Well, the one positive thing was that they didn't. For the most part, he died alone.
Yes, but immediately thereafter. Marcion started to promote him, and then we
fought it all over again.
Yeah, and then the Roman Catholic Church incorporated it into their canon, his letters. But just imagine being that ignorant that as Rome was destroying Israel and the temple and killing the chosen people and burning copies of the Torah around those who could read Hebrew, that people believed that someone who said that this Roman government was God appointed and good for you was speaking for God.
There's kind of a lot of that feeling now in Christianity. You hear people say all the time, "Well, it all happened for a reason." No, it wasn't God's intent that your child get run over by a truck or something.
No,
or attacked by three guys. And
and that child could have been saved.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been saved from the cancer? No. Could it have been saved by run over the truck? No. But, it was pretty clear that the souls of those children of covenant members
mm-hmm.
who die before they are old enough to assess the Torah for themselves, so long as their parents do, as Yahweh said, which is to share the Torah with their children on a regular basis, teach them about the Torah. So that they grow up knowing and loving Yahweh, the children of the Torah are deemed to be children of the covenant. So the children of those who are in the covenant are deemed to be in the covenant. And so there's a way you can save their soul.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, virtually all parents condemn their children. Taking them to church instead. Or teaching them to put their hand over their heart as they
go to school,
sing the national anthem, or give the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Upon this, therefore, suddenly, surprisingly, openly, albeit briefly, he will arrive with his destructive opposition and ruinous calamity. He will smash and shatter, he'll breach and break something that's vital. And as a result, he's going to suffer affliction in an instant, and there will be no remedy, no cure. Paul created Christianity based upon a New Testament, based upon a new covenant. And this is exactly the result. There is no cure. So God says, presently these six things Yahweh hates, and seven are an abomination to his soul. The name here, of course, is Yahweh. It's not the Lord. It's not Jesus. It's not Christ. These are the things that Yahweh hates. Seven are an abomination to his soul. We've been through this list.
Mm-hmm.
Visions of grandeur. Hands that shed innocent blood. A deceptive tongue. A heart which devises and writes troublesome and idolatrous religious plans.
Mm-hmm.
Speech which rashly and impetuously run to and fro, darting about, approaching that which is evil. A maligning soul whose breath utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods. And seven, and then one who claims to be sent out as a messenger to do away with something important.
Only one person fits it all.
Yes, and particularly that last part.
Mm-hmm.
One who claims to be sent out as a messenger to do away with something important. Welcome to the world of Pauline Christianity. God called it an abomination. And all the things that made it possible, God says he hates. So why do you cling to that which God hates? Because in particular, this person claiming to be sent out as a messenger created controversy and strife between brothers.